Dante Leon is one of the top submission grapplers in the world, the first Canadian black belt world champion, and he's from right here in Windsor. Well, raised in Harrow. But this week on the show, join me, Drake Damore, as I chat with Dante about training, living the life of a full-time submission grappler, competing in world championships, and much more.
Hello, how you doing? It's Zach Cassie.
Adam Enrique.
Joe Siddle.
Tom Crawford.
Todd Warner.
Brett Romberg.
TJ Laramie.
And holy mackinac, you're listening to Wind City Sports.
What up, everybody? My name is Drake Damore, and thank you for streaming or downloading this episode of the Wind City Sports Podcast, Windsor's only local sports radio show and podcast, live on CJAM 99.1 FM in Windsor and Detroit every Thursday, and you can catch the Wind City Sports Podcast wherever you're listening to it right now, of course, or directly on windcitysports.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere podcasts are found. Search us up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, for our social medias, give us a subscribe on YouTube and like and follow on any social media you might like to use. We'll tell you how to find us online and as well on the podcast again at the end of the show as we normally do. But today is Thursday, January 23rd, 2020, and it's episode 179 of Wind City Sports. And this week on the show, we're stepping away from hockey for once and we're talking to an individual who hasn't gotten a lot of recognition here in Windsor. Not a lot of sports outlets, I suppose, cover a lot of martial arts, specifically outside of MMA, except for us. We've had a lot of jiu-jitsu practitioners and submission grapplers on the show in the last year or so. Obviously, myself being a passion, having a passion for the sport and practicing myself, leaves some connections and always some interest as well. So I do want to thank my brother Darren though for letting me know about this dude and helping me find him, pointing him out at what was the last one? What do they call it? Top Prospects? The last MMA event at the St. Denis Center. What is it called? Top Prospects Fighting Series? Something like that. Where he had the Laramie's fight. Our guest this week, Dante Leon, was in attendance, and my brother pointed him out and said, "That's a guy you gotta get on the show. He's a jiu-jitsu fighter. He lives out in Ohio, and he's competed against guys like Gary Tonin and Craig Jones." And I was like, "What? Let me look this guy up." And sure enough, from Harrow, Ontario, grew up out there, probably born here in Windsor. Sure as shit, that's him competing in the world championship. So shortly after that, he wins a gold medal in the World No-Gi Championship from right here in Windsor. I start to see a lot of people on Facebook praising him or giving him congratulations for the win. So it was a perfect time to reach out to him. Again, it was around Christmas time, so he came on down from Ohio to chat with me, as you'll hear in the conversation this week on the Wind City Sports Podcast. I always try and find like a central meeting location. He said he was coming down. He's going to be training at MTC. So we were going to meet there on Monday, I believe. We had to postpone it until a few days later. So I said, you know, same time, same place, just different day. So yeah, cool, no problem. We show up and we're locked out. So we did this interview from the parking lot of Maximum Training Center. It's pretty interesting. It was a little cold. So shout out to Dante for doing that with me. He was cool with it, but it was cold for myself just holding the phone there. So again, appreciate him taking the time to do that. But you'll hear in the whole conversation about how he grew up here and ended up going out to Ohio just to strictly train. We talk about the life of a full-time submission grappler. This guy's just making a living off grappling dudes in competition. And he actually has a big competition and rematch coming up for Kasai in a few weeks on February 1st. He'll be competing in a rematch. We'll talk about that again later on in the show when we come back. Later on, we're also going to have some news, of course, on our Windsor Lancers, break down some stuff with them, Windsor Spitfires, and Windsor Express. So in regards to the Windsor Spitfires, I want to talk a bit about Warren Reichel being released from the Barry Colts. So we had him on the show earlier in the season. If you missed it, Reichel left the Spitz after 10-11 years being the GM to start his first head coaching gig. And he had never coached really before. I mean, he went up to Barry and they got off with a hot start, apparently 10-5 in their first 15 games. And from then just kind of started to crumble after a lot of injuries came into effect as well with the team. But it was kind of a surprise in a sense. You know, it was pretty quick. Again, he wasn't really a coach, but he was a hockey mind. He was a great GM for our Spitfires and great scout as well before that. As we talked about on the podcast, he was a scout for the Phoenix Coyotes. So he went out to Barry to temporarily replace Dale Hawerchuk, who is currently taking some time off. He's ill with, I believe, throat cancer. And he came in as an interim coach and was released just early this week. So they said it was a tough decision, but... you know, got to do what you got to do to make the right moves for a team, as we're seeing a lot in the NHL. Speaking of which, Roaren even mentioned on the show here that, you know, he decided to leave the Spitfires in anticipation to kind of land something in the NHL. He said he had some stuff planned that didn't really come to fruition, so that's why he ended up taking the spot in Barrie, where he was offered a head coaching job. So one's the think, you know, what's next for Reichel? Is he going to come back to the Windsor Spitfires organization in some way? Obviously, he could potentially, but I don't think he'll bump out Bill Bowler, who a lot of people were surprised they didn't make any moves in the trade deadline. I guess we'll touch upon that later on as well. But we'll see if he ends up in the NHL, possibly with his buddy DJ Smith down in Ottawa. I mean, it's a pretty good connection, but again, it didn't come to fruition at the beginning of the season, so we'll see what happens for him in the middle of this one. Where is he going to go, or is he going to chill and just wait till next year? But we're going to jump into our interview in just a moment. Again, we'll have a little bit of stuff to talk about after the interview with Dante Leon. But I just quickly want to tell you about one of our sponsors inside of MTC, and that's Takedown Distribution. And their guard kimonos. They have their own brand of rash guards and gis for all you jiu-jitsu practitioners out there. I got myself one advertised on the social media this week, and back when I had Kevin Lee on as well. So if you're looking for a new gi or rash guard, definitely check out Guard Kimonos. You can get a discount going to our link we'll provide on social media. And you can go right into the store and look at product. You can have it shipped to you from right here in Canada, all in Canadian dollars. But if you're in Windsor and you're looking to get some gear, this is the place to go. You can go and try stuff on. You don't have to pay for shipping. You can actually see it in person before buying. And good prices too. So if you're looking for any gear, and if you're not necessarily just a jiu-jitsu guy or girl, you can go over there for you know, boxing gloves, mouth guards, cups, even just swag. They got some good Wrestling Canada t-shirts and stuff like that. If you're a wrestler, they got wrestling shoes, kick pads, you name it, they got it all. And it's right here in Windsor, located inside and above of MTC Maximum Training Center, the home of the UFC's Kyle Prepperlick. So yeah, if you're checking out, looking for some gear, check out Takedown Distribution in MTC on Dougal. But now, without further ado, we're going to transition to an interview with a guy who's kind of loosely affiliated with MTC, submission grappler Dante Leon. Here we go.
So I'm here outside of MTC here with a dude from Haro, Ontario, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt under Vitor Oliveira, training out of Grappling Fighting Team in Toledo, Ohio now, Canada's first black belt world champion, Dante Leon. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, man. I'm glad to be here. It's cool to do interview in Windsor, Ontario, kind of right around where I grew up, so pretty neat, man.
Probably not something you're used to as of late, eh?
Never. Not, hasn't happened ever, I don't
think. Oh, really?
I think one time in the past before I've done something in Windsor, but this is probably like first time I've done a podcast or anything around here.
All right, that's cool. I'll give them a little bit of credit. I mean, jiu-jitsu isn't like super like mainstream, so like
true.
I'll give some people the benefit of doubt of like maybe not knowing who you were, but I'm like, holy shit, like this guy's right from around here.
Yeah.
This is super fucking cool, right? So... As I understand, you grew up around here, probably playing hockey and other stuff, but
yep.
You're also introduced to martial arts at a young age too, so obviously not jiu-jitsu.
No, yeah.
Try to tell me about your introduction to martial arts in general.
When I got introduced to martial arts, it was through my dad. He was the first one. He was a boxer, kickboxer, all kind of stuff like that. So I was with him for the most part. Younger, I'd say probably like 6 years old is when I started doing some kind of like, you know, stand-up training, boxing, okay. Eskrima, different kind of like martial arts like that. And then when it came time when I got a little older and he thought I was ready, he put me into jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
And then that's kind of just snowballed from there. Yeah.
Because a lot of kids, like myself, you kind of put into karate and hockey, like yourself,
uh-huh.
probably.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, parents just want to kind of put people or their kids into things. So a lot of them are hockey and karate around here. Maybe baseball in the summer or something like that. So
yeah.
I figured that was a pretty general introduction.
Oh,
to
yeah.
It.
I was in hockey for sure, like, when I was a kid. Growing up in Harrow, there wasn't a whole lot to do. We had an arena, and if you played a sport, it was usually hockey. You'd play some pickup soccer, baseball, whatever other little sports you could play. But other than that, it was mostly everybody's playing hockey if you went anywhere outside of the town, you know. Mm-hmm. Everybody was playing hockey if you went anywhere with any kind of sport, really. So it was kind of rare for somebody to do anything that wasn't, like, totally normal. Like a soccer player. I know from Harrow, Ontario, there's Lionel Sanders. Mm-hmm. He's like Iron Man, track athlete, you know, but that's still kind of like a mainstream sport. So for somebody to go into a sport kind of like jiu-jitsu that's kind of under the radar, for lack of a better term, and from Harrow, Ontario, is rare. I think I'm the only one.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt. Even Windsor alone, right?
Yeah.
That was the other thing I was going to say. Like, people grow up thinking, I want to be a hockey player. I want to be a football player. No one thinks I'm going to be a jiu-jitsu fighter or whatever.
Yeah, I'm going to be jiu-jitsu or a submission grappling or anything like that. Never.
So, first introduction to BJJ was at Tecumseh Jiu-Jitsu,
It was at Tecumseh Jiu-Jitsu when I was 12 years old. The week of my 12th birthday is actually when I started, so...
That's pretty memorable, so you know exactly how long you've
been exactly.
Going.
So it's like about 12 and a half years now.
Did you realize the passion for it immediately, or did it kind of grow over time?
It definitely grew, but I did like it as soon as I did it. Like, I loved it. The first class I did, I loved it. And then I liked it so much that I was like, I want to stop doing the introductory classes now, and I want to start to do what everybody else is doing. Like, I want to do what the kids are doing, you know what I mean? I would be off to the side, like, doing my intro classes, and I'd be like... itching to do more, like I really wanted to do it. So back then in these areas, so I trained here for the most part. I trained in Toledo and Detroit also when I was younger, and there was no real kids classes and no real teenage classes. So I was at a weird age where I was kind of like older than most of the kids, and then I got to the point where I was a little too advanced for the kids class, even though my technique kind of caught up quick. So I had to jump in the adult class from like late 12, early 13 years old. And that was kind of different back then, because like I said, there was no kids classes. Like nowadays, you don't have 12-year-olds or 13-year-olds training in adult classes. You have teen classes, you have kids classes, and they go up to like certain ages, and there's more kids for them to train with. I didn't have that. I didn't have like any kids my age. If there were kids my age that trained, they trained with me in the adult class. So that was definitely way different. And now I don't think you're going to see that as much because the sport's grown. Even in Windsor, I don't think you'd go to a jiu-jitsu gym and see a 12-year-old in the adult class. He's probably going to be training in the teenagers' class, if anything.
And again, unless they have the experience and skill that you kind of put in, that's probably very beneficial for you. They probably didn't realize it, but I mean...
No, it was good. If I went back, I'd want it done the same way again, for sure. Yeah. You know, especially given the circumstances, but it's definitely different.
Well, it sucks being on one side of the room and being like, I want to be on the other, right? Like, doing all that stuff,
exactly.
No matter what it is, right?
Uh huh.
And now to kind of talk about competition. So as we kind of established that's your full-time job, right?
Yep.
So I want to kind of talk about first getting into competing, but for people that may not understand, getting into competing, I'm not talking about like your kind of quote-unquote professional tournaments and competitions and stuff like that. I'm sure you probably wanted to get into a tournament just to get better and to, you know, test yourself. So I'm sure that was the mentality, kind of bring us through it a little bit.
Man, so now, like just now, I start to tell people that now there's money in jiu-jitsu, right? Okay. Now there's like professional events out there like Kasai and Fight to Win, where you can, if you're a big name guy and you have some notoriety, and I've been fortunate enough to be one of those people to headline events like this, and you can make money and you can make a living. You can be a professional jiu-jitsu athlete. Nowadays, you can say that. I'm a professional jiu-jitsu athlete. Before, we had to cut our teeth at these tournaments that we paid to enter in. And the World Championships that just happened this past couple weekends ago, I had to pay to enter that tournament. That's a IBJJF Black Belt World title. You know, so that's all like the tournaments there were. So when you're starting out, you're paying money to go and register for these tournaments and compete in. And when I first started competing, I was a kid, so my parents were paying for me to go into these tournaments and traveling, taking me to these events and things like that. So first time I competed was 13. and I competed at the Arnold Classic. Oh, yeah. It was run by Naga. So everybody remembers the Arnold around here.
Yep.
That was like one of the biggest tournaments. Actually, when it was run by the Gracies, it was one of the biggest tournaments in North America. And that was like my first event. I had no pressure on me because I just got done playing hockey. I didn't really train. I trained like once a week. It was just something I wanted to do. My parents said, yeah, let's do it. I did really well, and then from there, I just had the itch to compete. I think that's what kind of, like, skyrocketed me liking jiu-jitsu, because, you know, I always feel the same way now. If I'm just going to train jiu-jitsu, I really like it, I really enjoy it, but if I don't have anything coming up to compete in, I mean, I always want to have something to do. I always want to have something to, like, go and show what I've been doing in the gym, you know?
Gotcha. I mean, in regards to the jiu-jitsu itself, there's many different aspects of it, right?
Yes.
The competition side, so... I mean, when you're talking about it that way, but the way you describe that is very, very good. I don't know if someone's asked you that before, just to, like, shooting the shit, but I was like,
yeah,
that's very, like...
But it's true. I mean, everybody started paying to enter tournaments, you know what I mean? Like, we all started... It's just like MMA around here. Like, this isn't California, this isn't Brazil, this isn't these kind of places where, like, you could just go and compete every weekend, you know? Like, in Brazil, if you want to compete, you could just go down the street and compete, like, every weekend.
So, yeah, every
like,
day.
California now, like, you can compete against world-class competition, like, bi-weekly over there, because that's, like, where most of, like, the really good young talent is in America, is in the West Coast, is on the West Coast, sorry, and they have competitions over there all the time. So you could get great competition there. But for us, we had to, like, travel and pay lots of money to get shitty guys to compete against, like, other shitty guys to fight against, you know what I mean? Because we were kind of, like, behind everybody. So it was always super hard, man, because you'd always, like, pay money and travel these tournaments in, like, you know, Michigan, Ohio, somewhere around here in like, Ontario to compete. Not even close to, like, world class or, like, international level, but, like, that was all you had, you know what I mean? So we all started doing that. Like, everybody at the highest level that came from a similar situation to me, we all did that shit, you know?
Mm-hmm. It shows how much it's grown, too, even since you started 10, 12 years ago.
Exactly.
There wasn't even kids' classes.
Exactly.
Now there's kids' world tournaments.
Exactly,
like
that's
right?
It. Yeah, people don't know. Like, for around here, I'm, like, OG when it comes to this stuff. Like, I was around when it wasn't really a thing, you know what I mean?
That's what
jiu-jitsu,
I mean.
Even
MMA had to get established, right?
Uh-huh,
so,
yeah.
Like, when you were talking about just kind of going around and recruiting people, it was the same thing. But now you got jiu-jitsu where the appeal isn't the way it is to other people because it's not punching and kicking.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So it was tougher to kind of establish that world. But now look at how, like you said, there's money in it, right? So,
uh-huh.
And I think you kind of touched upon it yourself, but you kind of went from, you know, I want to get better, I want to compete and stuff like that, to I can take this more seriously and make money off it, right? There was a time, in maybe that one tournament kind of sparked it, right?
Well, that one tournament was like, that's what made me want to compete. And I think what made me want to be something more than just like a guy who does it and a guy who goes out and compete on the weekends was when I won my first like major tournament.
Yeah.
I won the IBJJF Pans when I was 15, but in my 16th year as a juvenile one. So that was like my first major title. And after I won that, I realized like I can actually do this. Like I can really do this shit.
Mm-hmm.
For real. So after that, the tournaments picked up. That was my focus. I told my parents, like, this is what I want to do for my life. You know?
What did they say?
Honestly, my parents have always been really supportive. Okay. My parents have been great. I can't say anything bad about what they did for me. And they did everything they could, and then they opened all the doors that they could, too. Mm-hmm. And they continue to support. So I have nothing bad to say. It was honestly to convince people outside of your life. Like, I had my parents' support. I had my direct family support, so that was good. It was just hard to get people on board with relationships as far as, like, women go and other people that support you from the outside, like friends and peers and people like that. There's always a lot of people who have a lot of doubt. Because remember, even then, jiu-jitsu didn't have money.
That's
like, we didn't
what
get paid in jiu-jitsu. So,
that's
like,
what I'm getting at,
when you're sitting there trying to be, like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, and you're like a 16-year-old white kid, everybody looks at you like, you're nuts, man. You know, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
You don't make money in that shit.
That's what I'm saying.
And you see everybody else retiring at, like, you know, Jack Ray's a guy who fights MMA, and he retired from jiu-jitsu at 26 years old or 25 years old, and everybody's like, why would you go into a sport like that? You know what I mean? Like, you have people who quit it because they don't make any money in it.
Well, even at the time, that's what I mean. Like, I'm not saying, like, oh, you want to do that. It's more like, you can do that.
Yeah,
like, that's exactly what I thought. Maybe they would be like, maybe, you know, go to school or whatever.
Exactly.
Right?
People always had that thing, like, do you get paid to do that? And it was always like, maybe not.
If I win.
Not now, you know. If I win, maybe. Yeah. Like, and when you're a purple belt, honestly, up until when you're a black belt, you have to be a black belt to, like, really make it. I mean, nowadays you see guys who are, like, lower ranks are starting to make it a little bit, like guys like Nicky Rod.
Yeah. And well, yeah, that's the spectacle.
The Rutulos and Tackett, they're, like, blue belt, purple belt, so they're making a name for themselves. I'm sure they're getting some good paychecks, too, you know, but, like, back in the day, you had zero hope of being anything, of having two nickels to rub together unless you were, like, a black belt world champion, mm-hmm. ADCC champion. And it's all black belts, you know what I mean? So,
and all that, all that experience you gained is coming as you're growing too, right?
Yeah.
You start competing at blue purple belt.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously throughout that time you're meeting people, you're making connections, which is everything you need here in jiu-jitsu. So
yeah.
How'd you end up in Toledo with the GF team?
So Toledo was like the guy over there, Kelly Highmore. He's a guy I've known since I was 12, 13 years old, training in Toledo, Ohio, when I would do some cross training as a kid. He's a guy I've known for a long time, and I was looking to just expand my career and go somewhere else. And hadn't, like, stayed in touch with him, was at training at his gym, and he said, you know, why don't you come out here and stay out here for a while, you know, see what you can do here, what we can make. If you're going to, like, move on from here, we're going to go do something. And basically just ended up going there and realized we were kind of on the same page as far as what we wanted from a gym, what we wanted as far as a career for myself, and just ended up staying there and building things there.
Yeah, again, just making those connections are the thing that makes a huge difference. And once you get there and see it and do it, there's not much to it, right?
Yep.
And exactly. As we kind of talked about before, I want to kind of get into that entrepreneur lifestyle a bit, you know. So you're from Windsor, you move out to Ohio to strictly do jiu-jitsu,
uh-huh.
And that's what you're doing as a competitor.
Yep.
But not only that, you have sponsors and bonuses, whatever, from competitions, but also another big thing that's popular now is those instructional videos. So you made some yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what else goes into, I guess, your lifestyle? You're doing it, do you have, like, another job, or do you just put as much into jiu-jitsu to try and get as much out of it?
So pretty much everything that I do in jiu-jitsu is to make any kind of, like, money or name for myself. Everything's through jiu-jitsu. Like, I don't really do anything else besides jiu-jitsu. So I teach seminars, I do teach classes, I'm an instructor, privates, all kinds of stuff, my instructional DVDs, and then sponsorship, wins, things like that, you know. That's pretty much it.
And that covers it.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, the goal is to have more and more and more and build and build and build, right? So once you get, like, a taste of it a little bit, you always want more. But I start to see jiu-jitsu now being legit, man. Starting to have legit paychecks. We're starting to have legit paydays. And it's jiu-jitsu. It's not MMA. I can fight every weekend if I really want to. Mm-hmm. I can fight back-to-back weekends if I want money or I'm feeling good and I need to, like, you know, build my brand. I can fight back-to-back weekends, no problem. I can stay out on the road, fight one weekend, teach seminars, fight the next weekend. MMA, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You're suspended. Even if you, like...
killed.
Yeah, I mean, even if you and I were to fight, you could knock me out in the first round, and you could still get medically suspended for 3 months because
you have a
concussion or whatever. You're obviously not going to be fighting next weekend either, most likely. So, with me, I can. You know what I mean? I do fight at multiple weight divisions, so I can fight... fight like every weekend of the year if I really wanted to, you know.
Multiple competitions.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's something that you wanted to do, right? Like,
yeah, for sure,
right?
For sure. This is like, this is a dream come true. If I can do jiu-jitsu and get paid for it, like, I love to do it and I make money doing it. Yeah, of course. Perfect.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's quite the lifestyle. I gotta admit, that's pretty fucking awesome. But and you've been crossing paths with some cool people as well. I've seen, I mean, you've competed against, you know, if you're a jiu-jitsu practitioner or fan, like, look through this guy's history and you're gonna know a lot of people
guys, man.
So we're gonna get into that, but I mean, first off, again, like, networking is a big part of it. Do you look to work and, like, collaborate with many people as possible, like you said, like, kind of cross training or whatever it might be?
Oh yeah, I'm open to train with whoever, you know. I mean, the training room, it's not the competition mat. So I'm open to train with whoever. People are kind of, like, secretive about who they train with. I really I think that's kind of bullshit, you know? Yeah. Training is what training is. If you're taking training that seriously, then you're not getting out of what you need out of the training room. You should be able to train with an open mind and be able to kind of, like, not have that reflect how you're going to be in a competition. The training room is where you get better,
yeah,
where you experiment, you know? So I think everybody has something to bring to you and has something that they can, like, offer you, help you improve on, even if they are somebody you could compete against in the future. I don't think that should determine who you train with.
Yeah, everyone's kind of there for the same reason, right?
Yeah, exactly. So everybody's there to get better.
Other. Exactly. So I'm glad you said that, actually, because who are some gyms or maybe teams, people that you might train with if you're looking to prep for a competition, rather it be if you're coming back here or maybe, you know, out there in the States?
Yeah, that's how they get. They get, like, some places think that you're going to steal something from them, or they're going to give you, like, parts of your secret. I just think it's just so ridiculous, man. It's, like I said, if you're taking training that seriously, you're not getting out of training what you really need to and what you should. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't, your ego needs to rest, and you need to be able to train with an open mind, and open mind, man. You're supposed to be able to get better. You're supposed to be receptive. You're supposed to be the sponge. So if you can't be like that with somebody you're going to potentially compete against, or somebody who can beat you up, then you're not going to go very far here, you know?
Yeah. Like I said, everyone's got to be on the same page and be willing to help each other, right?
That's it. Exactly.
So who are some people that you kind of reach out to? Is there anyone that you have that you kind of, like, okay, if I want to train specifically for a competition, I'm going to go and roll with these guys or whatever?
Yeah, man. So I have quite a few guys. So I'm big on looking for who's the right guy to train with, you know what I mean? I want to look for the right guy, and I have some things I look for in people that I train with. You know, one obviously is skill and talent, and then I look for people who are tough. I look for people who can train hard, you know, and that's how I like to train. And I like the people who are like that, the people who you can, you know, you can give them the business, and they don't really, they don't get offended by it, or they can give it right back to you, you know? So the guys up in Illinois, Heath Pettigo's gym, I train with them. I love training with those guys, man. He's got great guys over there. Andrew Wildsey, Alejandro, George, all those guys there are good. Vitor Oliveira, who gave me my black belt, he's in Columbus. He's still one of the best guys to train with, my coach, everything. I have good guys to train with in Toledo as well. Actually, some guys from Windsor here come down to train with me in Toledo, and then when I'm here, I train with them. So I got guys all over. Some guys in New York, I like to train with Marcelo's guys.
Oh, yeah?
I like to train with Jason Rao, guys like that. So, and like I said, down to train with whoever.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of aspects when it goes into being a pro athlete, too. So aside from, you know, just training jiu-jitsu, I'm sure you have a pretty heavy, you know, like, workout regimen, too, right?
Yes, it's
part of your full-time job.
The lifting regimen is big time, especially how I am. I guess I lift more than a lot of other people do in the sport. I guess I lift a little bit differently.
It's not a big focus for some people, eh?
But I think it's starting to become more and more. It's a huge aspect, man. I mean, you see in any single sport, you know, sports that people make $30 million a year, why are they lifting? Why wouldn't you lift, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's possible.
You want to be the weight room is where you get stronger, so strength is a huge factor. It's probably the most important attributes in any single sport in the world is strength. Everything else can be equal, and if strength is more, it's impossible for you to win. So it's important to be strong. So I think I'm starting to see more and more guys in the jiu-jitsu world do something similar to what I do and what the high-level guys out there do.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, including, so I was going to kind of wait to bring it up, but Gordon Ryan's retirement today, and he was big on that too, right? So it kind of shows that's a good example, I suppose.
For sure. He's the best guy. Yeah. He's the best guy in the world, man. He's the best jiu-jitsu in the world. Everybody can say whatever they want about him, but he's the best. I don't know if he's really retired. I don't know.
Knowing him, it's like,
I don't know if he really is retired, then cool. I don't know how long he's going to stay retired. You know, it's hard when you're somebody who's, you can say what you want about him, like his online thing, but he's really competitive, and he's got an ego the size of this building behind us. So I don't know if you're going to sit back and watch somebody stand on the place that you think is yours for very long. You know what I mean? I don't know if you're going to sit back at home, you know, you, no matter how much money you're making or sitting on the couch, and then you see somebody on the number one place that you know, like, hey, I can beat that fucking guy. I'm better than these guys are. So I don't know how long, if it is true, I don't know how long he's going to stay retired.
Again, he's young age, right?
Yeah, so I mean, I think he's my age. I think he's a year, he might be a year older than I am, so he's got a lot of time, man.
He'll probably change his mind.
I guarantee.
And we kind of touched upon it just a bit ago there, but, you know, being here locally from Windsor, starting your martial arts career here, still keeping in touch with a lot of people coming down and training locally, right? I seen
that
actually in the summer you were doing some privates at Tecumseh and stuff like that, right?
I train a lot of the guys over there at Tecumseh. I've known Dozer since probably my first day of jiu-jitsu. You know, since I was 12 years old, Dozer's been known me and known my mother and father through the gym for a long time. He's a buddy of mine, and it's great that I come down here and train with him. A lot of his students come and train with me up in Toledo also, and I train down here with all those guys. I train a lot with TJ Laramie. We get together and we train over there. We train here sometimes at MTC, but I train with whoever here, man. I train with all the guys here.
Yeah, it's just cool to keep your kind of local connection, I suppose, too. And with a good martial arts base here in the city, right?
For sure. Very good.
So we're going to bring it a little bit more current. It's one thing we certainly have to talk about. Just a few weeks ago, actually, I had a match of the year candidate, Nogi World Finals against Jamie Canuto, winning 4-2, becoming the first ever Canadian world champion. I mean, simply put, how does that make you feel, being a Canadian and representing your country on a big stage in jiu-jitsu, the sport that you kind of helped grow here?
Man, I think that's awesome. To be the first Canadian adult black belt world champion. People argue and say, well, there's other Canadian world champions, but no one's ever been an adult black belt world champion. What does that mean? It means that there is no restriction on my age. It's professional. That's like the best of the best. That's, we're the guys who get drug tested. We're the guys who are, you know, on the center mat. That's a true world championship. So to have an IBJJF black belt adult world title is like carte blanche, man. I mean, that's rarefied air for a lot of people. That's like the ultimate, you know. So it's awesome, and I think it's great that I proved something that I've known for a long time, but I proved that it, like, you can do it. You know, like, you can be a white dude, you can be a Canadian, you know, you don't just need to be from like California or somewhere like that, or
train under this
Brazilian
guy,
or train under that guy, or train under a well-known Brazilian trainer or well-known trainer or anything like that. Like, you can be a world champ. I proved it. I proved it. I won that title. You know what I mean? I didn't close out the division. We fought in the final as teammates. We fought in the final. We decided to, and I won. So I earned that world title.
Yeah,
I proved it to everybody.
Your title, absolutely.
Exactly.
So what's next? Do you have anything set in your sights, or do you just kind of take it day to day?
February 1st, the Kasai Super Series in Dallas. That's going to be my first one of the year. I leave January just for training camps and things mostly, unless something else pops up. But February 1st is the main focus.
Well, like you said, you can compete every weekend.
Yeah,
you're just winning a world championship. It's like, oh, next month, back to it.
That's
right?
The thing. Yeah, it's jiu-jitsu, right? It's no, like, no six-month layoff unless, you know, touch wood, you know, hoping that it doesn't happen, but some kind of injury or anything like that, you know what I mean? So unless there's something like traumatic that happens, you can, like I said, you can be training and competing and be in the gym the next day.
Yeah, just because you broke your finger or something, you know,
exactly.
That's it. No, you're good.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Well, and as we kind of touched upon before, just kind of wrap it up, man, stellar history of competitors that you've went against and the things that you've done. Is there anything or anyone in your sights that you would like to compete against, maybe round two, or anyone that you haven't crossed paths with, so you'd be like, you know what, it might be fun to go against this guy?
Yeah, man, that's a question that, like, every day there's not every day, but all the time there's just new guys that come up. There's guys who get promoted, there's guys who get hot, there's guys who say, like, they just start to click and their competition starts to come up and they start to pose a problem and they're in your division, you know, things like that. So there's guys all over that are really, really good. I'm in the top 4 in the world in my weight and top 10 pound for pound. So I think the guys that I'm looking at to fight are guys who are around that level, around my level, around like that high level, the upper 1% in the world. That's the guys I'm looking to compete against and get matches with. But I compete a lot, man. I put myself out there a lot. And like I said, I compete at different weights. I'm competing at 170, 175, all the way up to 185. So the list of guys I could be competing against is pretty fast. There's just so many guys out there, too many, almost too many to just name specifics.
And again, a lot of them you already have crossed paths with, right?
Yeah, so. I've fought so many of them, man, and there's like a lot of guys who I've fought, almost everybody I've fought, I want to fight again, especially if you beat me before.
Yeah, for sure.
I definitely want to fight you again, so, and I believe in giving somebody a chance at redemption, too. I mean, we've all had bad fights, we've all had fights that we want to take back, we've all had good fights that we want to run it back again, so... future, we'll see, man. Yeah, you know, I plan to be here a while.
That's the martial arts game, especially jiu-jitsu too. We're obviously not looking to make anything specific, but of course, when I got a world champion here, my brother was telling me about you, and he's like, "Oh, he fought Gary Tonnen at ADCC." I was like, "Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, let's get this guy on because that's pretty fucking cool, right?"
Yeah,
like,
for
just
sure.
Little things like that you always got to ask about. But again, just a kid from Windsor, proving his game, man, in a sport that I love, in jiu-jitsu, so that's really cool, and thanks for coming out.
Hey, no problem, man. I appreciate being on here, and like I said, it's cool to be here in Windsor doing a podcast on jiu-jitsu, man. Two guys from Windsor, so pretty wild that the sport's grown to the point that we can be here in Windsor, Ontario. People from the outside probably don't know what that means as much as the people that come from here, but we can be in Windsor, Ontario talking about jiu-jitsu and submission grappling on a world level and an international scene. So I think that's really, really cool.
All right, there we have it, ladies and gentlemen. Dante Leon from right here in Windsor, competing out of GF team out in Ohio. He's a submission grappler full-time. And as mentioned just before the interview, he's got a match coming up and a rematch with Renato Canuto, who had that crazy match with Gary Tonnen at ADCC earlier this year. We're actually... Dante matched up with Gary as well, so that's going to be a good one on Kasai Pro 7. It also features Nicky Rod and Roberto Cyborg and a lot more very well-known jiu-jitsu practitioners or fighters. I don't even know what to call them half the time, but if you're into the sport and if you're interested, you definitely got to check out the competition aspect of it too. Starting to really make some rounds as we talk to with Dante. It's still a little bit under the radar. Like I said, I'm surprised a guy like Bob Belichico hasn't gave him a call and done some sort of content piece with him, being from right here in Windsor. I can't believe that no one had, you know, kind of reached out to him. But he has an impressive record, as we talked about. He went through so many people, and we even talked on the day that Gordon Ryan retired, the internet troll king. Who knows if he'll be back, but that would be a great matchup to see him and Dante go at it. So again, that's a week from tomorrow, February 1st, Kasai Pro 7, featuring Windsor's own Dante Leon, and I believe the main event of the event. But without further ado, we're going to talk about some other sports news we have here this week. Our Windsor Lancers athletes of the week are from the women's volleyball team, Lexi Pollard, and from the track and field team, Mandy Brunette. Currently no write-up on the site right now, but if you catch the Wind City Sports radio show, which will be dropping or airing today live on CJAM at 12:30, or replays on Tuesday at 8 p.m. you'll catch that, or go to golancers.ca for all information. But a quick weekly recap for the Lancers. Wasn't the best for them. They had the men's and women's volleyball teams did pick up wins though over RMC last Friday, 3-1 for the men and 3-0 for the women. So here's where things start to turn. Also on Friday, both men's and women's hockey teams lost to the University of Toronto, 1-0 for the women and 5-2 for the men. And they continued that not-so-good start to the weekend on Saturday as the men lost to Ryerson and the women to Guelph. The volleyball teams then split a pair of games with Queen's University, the men losing and the women winning. And meanwhile, both basketball teams lost to Brock on the weekend. Next up for the Lancers, I don't have it here, so you have to check out golancers.ca. We'll have more information on all Lancers sports, games, times, and how to stream live games as well on oua.tv, home and away games. The Windsor Spitfires are currently on a 3-game winning streak and look to continue that tonight at the WFCU Center as they take on the London Knights. Although they are on a roll, they are currently now down to second place in the OHL's Western Conference. And first last week, the Kitchener Rangers have taken the top spot for now. Following tonight's game, they will be in Sarnia on Sunday afternoon and then coming back home next Thursday to take on Flint. More information on WindCitySports.com. The Windsor Express basketball team are coming off a win over the Island Storm last Friday here in Windsor at the WFCU Center. 127-99 was the final score. Currently in third place in the NBL of Canada Central Division, the Express are now set to face off with the Kitchener-Waterloo Titans tonight in Kitchener at the Odd. They will also play the Sudbury Five on Sunday afternoon on the road, but their next home game is also against Sudbury next Saturday, February 1st, at the WFCU Center, 7 p.m. They're also advertising SaveTheBarn.com on their website and encouraging Windsorites to share their stories of the barn. In case you missed it, the Express are hoping to move into the barn and make it their new home by the 2021-2022 season, so basically by December of 2021. See WindsorExpress.ca for more information on that and all information in regards to your Windsor Express basketball team, and also on their social media. A lot more information on there. But looks like that's all this week on the Wind City Sports Podcast. My name is Drake DeMore, and I'm here every Thursday with a brand new episode and a brand new episode of the radio show, as mentioned just briefly ago. 99.1 FM in Windsor and Detroit. C-Jam Thursdays at 12:30. And replays on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. But you can hear every single episode of the Wind City Sports Podcast wherever you're listening to it right now. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere podcasts are found. But if you're having trouble, just directly go to windcitysports.com. We have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. So give us a like, follow, subscribe, whatever it may be. We post some specific and exclusive videos on our YouTube, some exclusive interviews that have never been on the podcast, and covering events. And we also post previews from the shows. So again, if you're trying to find us, at WinCity_sports is our handle. If you're ever having trouble finding the pod or the social media, WinCity is all one word, WinCity. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever it is, give us a subscribe and a review. Let us know how we're doing. Let me know how you're doing. You can also follow me, Drake DeMore, your host, every week on Twitter and Instagram, at Drake DeMore. But until next week, smell you later.